I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Footy Prime the Podcast presents the Weekend Wrap Show with Brendan Dunlop, James Sharman, and Craig Forrest.
Such a big weekend of Premier League football all around. If you were stuck sick, beached on your couch, what a weekend it was to be ill. That was my fate this weekend. Joined again on this weekend recap by Craig Forrest. How are you, buddy?
Better than you.
Yep, which is usually the case, but especially on this weekend. Symptom-free you are. Good on you.
Yeah, the sniffles, right?
I've got the hardcore. It's not COVID. I went and got tested. It's not COVID. But let me tell you, when you haven't been sick in 2 years, a head cold, I'm a big baby. It was not fun. It was not fun. Our guest is back, buddy. Okay. He liked us so much, James Sharman has come back to the weekend recap.
I really enjoyed it last week. It's a nice way to kind of, you know, conclude the weekend, actually, to be honest with you.
What did you like most about it? That we were talking about games or that Wonger was absent?
Well, that's a big part of it, Wonger being absent, to be quite frank. Yeah. I will try and make it whenever I can, and maybe it will be a regular thing. It's a fun show, let's be honest, and it's good for the old brain to kind of remind ourselves of what happened on the weekend, because it does disappear pretty quickly from these old sinews.
Yeah, what did happen?
Stuff.
I forgot.
There was a lot of stuff. I tend to forget when I sit here with Craig if there's something I've not written in my notes that, yeah, I've totally lost it.
I bet you didn't forget anything about the Villa score, did you?
No, that was a good game. Look, Steven Gerrard, manager of the year, six points out of six, all is well at Aston Villa. There are two, we talked about Wonger's absence tonight, two major absences from the weekend that got all the attention. Some guy named Ronaldo didn't start for United, and there weren't any orange balls anywhere. Winter fell in England, and no one was prepared with an orange ball.
That surprised me too. I'm watching those games, that City game, and like it's really hard to follow the ball. It really was. And that's why they need orange balls. So where were they? Did they not come out until like December?
Russia,
were they?
They're in the Europa League kit bag, right? West Ham have all of them. Leicester and West Ham, although Leicester didn't bring them out, they have all the orange balls for the Europa League.
All I could think of when I was watching those conditions was, I hope Canada's watching this and all the mainstream media that makes us a huge deal of playing in Edmonton, you know, and how, oh, God, look at this. There's snow plows on the field. It does happen elsewhere as well now and again. It's not that big a deal.
Actually, it's a pretty big deal. Everybody's like, when you're playing, that's rare. That's rare.
But it seems more and more now, though, doesn't it? I think the weather's changing over there. And it does seem every couple of years there's a weekend when the weather really has an effect and there is a game, you know, postponed. It seems more than ever before. Or maybe they're just wimps now and, you know, there's more rules about, you know, spectator safety and all that bullshit. Whereas in the past, or whatever, just pile them in there. Who cares? They'll figure it out.
This is not a stats show, but allegedly, I think statistically, they do incur more snowfall now than they did in previous years in England. It has increased. So yeah, you do always get a weekend or two like this. Oftentimes though, it's the transfer window, the closing of the transfer window, right? It snows 1 inch in London and they push it back 24 hours. because the fax machines didn't work. there was like two years when we were doing the daily at the Score, and that was the case. And I just thought that was the most hilarious thing possible because I couldn't imagine that.
It's funny though, Craig, when they do, I mean, listen, I haven't been there for many years now, but when a bit of snow does come and how the whole country just shuts down, oh, look at an inch of snow, bring in the army.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, like, you know, places like Yorkshire that get hit once in a blue moon and once a year. I mean, how much are they going to invest on infrastructure and preparation? And for the next 10 years, you could be, nothing happens.
Yeah.
I don't, you know what I mean? It's a difficult one for them because they don't get enough there to, you know, it only pulls a place down for a few days, you know what I mean? Like, it's
And I think the concern though is it's not so much about the players, right, and the pitch. It's about the safety in the stands. That's, I think, the biggest concern and why they do postpone these games. I think that was the case with the Burnley match, Burnley Spurs, you know, watching out for the fans as opposed to every ground's got underground heating now. You don't get frozen pitches in the Premier League, I don't think, do you? Can't remember last time.
I think they have to have underground heating.
Yeah.
It's a requirement that every club that comes up. And in fact, I think it was Burnley maybe that did not have that. Burnley leads the football league in snowed off matches.
Do they
win
really?
When they won promotion, I think they tried to get away with it the first time and not doing it. Because they might have had a snowed out game early on. But yeah, I believe Burnley is the reason for the rule.
Is that something they brag about, and it's in their club museum that we have a record? We have more snow outs than any other club.
I've never been to Burnley, but they don't have much else to
brag about. You haven't been to the Burnley Museum, haven't you? Oh, you're missing out, B.
No.
Have you been to the... You haven't been to the Burnley Museum.
You think Sharman is a real, like, student of the game, a real geek of the game that?
He doesn't think that for a second.
No. I've been to the Football Museum in Manchester, which is actually quite nice. They've done it up a bit like the Hockey Hall of Fame.
In Manchester, like football overall, just generic football, or specifically to the United or City?
It's generic football. But I was thinking, is it the Football Association Hall of Fame or the Football Hall of Fame? And I don't remember. I think it was all football.
Hall of Fame?
No, I described it as a Hall of Fame. It's called the Football Museum. But it looks like the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's done up kind of that way. There's installations and interactive things, and it's, you know, it's done up in a gallery the same way anyone who's been to the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto can experience.
Because they just started the Hall of Fame, right, or whatever they want to call it, with the Premier League, and they're, you know, inviting certain players and the usual suspects the last year or so, haven't they? Is it the Hall of Fame? Is that what they're calling it? I forget now.
Yeah.
Yeah, just created that.
I believe so, yeah.
When's your induction, Craig?
I don't know. I haven't had the call yet.
You should be. You're one of 13 foreigners in that opening day of the Premier League.
That could get me in.
Yeah.
Over the 9-0.
your agent screwed up because you weren't involved in that documentary on Amazon where they went through the first few days of the Premier League, the first season. It's called Fever Pitch. We said we were going to sit down with Wonger and film Wonger watching it. I still think we should do that.
We should do that. That'd be really great, because imagine the questions that arise from that, from Wonger. It'd be like ridiculous.
It would be amazing.
You know, the whole thing, there's no stupid questions. That's not true, because there would be a lot of stupid questions.
No. Here we are 7 minutes into our weekend recap show, and we've spoken about infrastructure of towns that don't invest, you know, what the city of Toronto does in snow removal, which is $50 million, if you're wondering. So if in a proper city that's prepared for snow, you could buy a Premier League striker every year with what they spend on snow removal.
And get another great stat.
You won't be able to watch him because there's too much snow.
Exactly. Out there somewhere is a $50 million striker running around the field. No, you can't see him. Too much snow.
Well, who knows?
Well, speaking of that, I mean, Canada's national team, I mean, the issue, I believe, at BMO isn't so much. I think it was potential safety, van safety, as well as the pitch has been basically put to sleep.
And even with the undersoil heating, there's only so much they can do in those conditions, right? Everyone talks about that final. I think I've said this to both of you, but I don't think I've said this when we're recording on air. Everyone talks about that 2017 final as being the coldest match they've been to, or a horrible, you know, game of football because of the conditions. I was at the coldest match ever at BMO Field. No one talks about this because it was in like the sixth round of the CONCACAF Champions League, whatever it was. I think they were in the quarters or the last 16, and they lost to some Panamanian side. It was Valentine's Day or the day after Valentine's Day, and it was minus 16 degrees. It was horrendous. That's and the pitch good. Was a sandbox. Because they had to pour so much sand on the pitch to prevented from freezing or whatever they'd done. Every time Mavinga ran, he kicked up sand for 30 yards.
Tell you what, I saw a lot of, not a lot, but from the games today and this weekend, today, I guess, short sleeves and no gloves, far more than we saw, you know, a couple of weeks ago, by the way. So just putting that out there.
So the Premier League is a harder group now.
Yeah, they're proper players. Hard.
So nails. As much as we want to talk about this, the Gen Z and this next generation being soft, what you're saying is, well, not all of them. Look at these tough guys that show up with short sleeves and no gloves.
There are some.
Right. Steve Sidwell wasn't the last one. There's others out there.
Hard to take a throw in, though, quickly.
Actually, your boy Mikel Antonio took his gloves off and got yelled at for taking his gloves off to clean the ball in that game when they were pushing on at the end there.
You got yelled at? By who?
By the officiating crew for slowing the game down. They were losing, though, so it was like, didn't make any sense. I think that's what he said. He was just, he took his gloves off and he was trying his hardest to get the ball dry so he could throw it in. And he was, and it was a great long throw into the box. But yeah, he was getting chirped at to hurry it up.
Hey, that Lanzini goal, by the way.
My God.
Ooh, what a beauty, right? And I mean,
that was amazing.
They missed it too late, of course, and the decline has begun with Craig's hammers. But regardless, that was a great goal.
Yeah.
You know what? I want to be the only podcast in the world that leads with that game. But let's, we're doing this now. Man City 2, West Ham 1. Lanzini spoiling Ederson's clean sheet with one of the best goals of the weekend, one of the goals of the month for sure. And I think, yeah, leaving some people to question whether this magical ride is over. So, Craig, do tell your faithful, is it over?
What, the Hammers run?
I mean, they can't kick it with the big teams, clearly. So I guess they're not a top four side.
Well, in fairness, they did beat Liverpool.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. To kick it with the big teams is a tough thing to do, and they were at least in the game. They're always in it. They played some decent stuff early on, but yeah, it's tough. I mean, Man City are a fantastic football team. You look at Chelsea, fantastic.
They are, but they beat Liverpool, right? Just a couple of weeks, 3 weeks ago now, I guess, before the break.
Yeah,
right? they have got that pedigree. They can beat the big guys.
They can, but that game could have gone the other way too.
I just think, look at the table now, right? I think West Ham does separate itself a little bit, I think, from what I've seen so far from performances. I think they are, you know, they're better than the chasing pack. I mean, I don't think they're going to finish in the top four, I don't think. I think Arsenal might, you know, catch them, although so far, you know, prove otherwise. But, you know, they're better than the Brightons, the Leicesters, the Palaces, right? Those mid-table teams. So I think West Ham is going to separate itself in the race for European football at some point. Wolves might surprise us too. They've been very good. But yeah, I think West Ham, 13 games, Craig, you tell us. I mean, 13 games, you know what you are, right? Pretty much. You know, if you've competed well for 13 games, chances are you're going to keep competing pretty well.
Especially with the this Europa Thursday, Sunday situation that can be a little off-putting. Never lay plan on Sundays all the time.
That's a good point, because usually that's a big story, isn't it? Like, oh, well, you know, they're in Europe for the first time in a while, and that's really difficult, that Thursday, Sunday, but it hasn't bothered West Ham at all so far.
No.
It hasn't seemed to. It bothered most Premier League fans, though, that didn't plan a whole Sunday or plan to be able to watch 4 9 a.m. kickoffs on a Sunday, though. It was because of Leicester and West Ham in the Europa League, right? They moved those fixtures to Sunday.
I like that. I don't mind watching it on Sunday.
It makes it easier. I think splitting the games 5 and 5 or whatever it is, you know, it kind of makes it a little bit easier, you know, than having to keep my eyes on, you know, 7 games at a time on a Saturday.
Yeah, but if you think of that, you've got 6 games at 10 a.m. You're not really paying attention to a lot of them, right?
There's not as much.
You've got on the main, maybe you've got one on the second monitor. I don't know. I had the 3 games on in the screen on the split on Apple TV. On the Premier League service provider that we have in this country, you can multi-screen it, and I like that. It is a lot. If you're trying to run 4 games, you're not paying attention to the 4 of them, but at least it's up. But at 6 games, it's too much.
I watched Match of the Day, and it's easier again to watch the fewer games, right? Again, a little bit more depth, not covering so many games, right? So,
yeah, Paul Merson and Alan Shearer love it because they only have to like watch the game. Sure.
No, it was Jermaine Genus and Micah Richards with Gary Lineker yesterday.
Really?
And I think they're both fantastic. I love them so much. Jermaine Genus, by the way, is one of those guys. He's such a slick broadcaster. He's going to be Gary Lineker in. Whenever Gary Lineker decides to hang him up, it's going to be Jermaine Genus walking into that job.
I think so too.
Because he's so good. You know, he was a slick midfielder. I always liked him as a player.
So did I.
Too injury prone, right? But he's even slicker as a broadcaster. It's really good. Not as slick as Craig, you know. I mean, yep. Listen, you got those great athletes who become great broadcasters. There's Craig at the top of the tree, so to speak. But Jermaine Junior, as a young prodigy, is coming close to that.
I wish it was the same, like, on our side, that as a good broadcaster, I could be an average footballer. That would be. That, yeah. I would just settle for that. If only I could just get that, right? Man City, would you say perhaps an average performance from Man City against West Ham? I mean, they controlled the game. But maybe the scoreline flatters West Ham like a little bit there. But if not for that Fernandinho insurance marker, we'd be talking about disaster for City. They didn't kill it off.
Exactly. No, they got the job done just about. You know, they haven't always played spectacularly, but most of the time they do. Like you said, West Ham's no pushovers.
You know, Riyad Mahrez, you know, he was the man, obviously, at Leicester that year, the best player, with respect to Jimmy Vardy, but Riyad Mahrez pulled the strings.
And Conte, the three of them.
Well, yeah, okay.
There were three-headed
monster. All right, fair enough.
But he was the exit. He was the big exit.
He was the creator. He was the, you know, whatever. He moved to Chelsea, to City, and he became one of the stars. And I just, every time I watch him play, I think, man, this is such a great footballer. He's so clever. And even in that game, you know, I think he had one great chance he probably should have scored at. But overall, he just pulls the strings quietly. You know, it's been such a great move for him going to City, getting all the trophies without having to be the man necessarily. He's one of Pep's men, right? Just rotate in and out. And when he plays, he really lets you down.
Yeah, as long as you're okay with being, you know, making two appearances in 10 games potentially and then having a run where it's the opposite. Well, I was surprised to see Sterling actually on the pitch for as long as he was. Not that he had a poor game, but just that he seemed like he'd fallen kind of out of favor and that he wasn't going to get that consistent run. There's really only, you know, two or three guys on that team that walk in when they're healthy. It's Ruben Diaz, Ederson, and Ilkay Gundogan. The rest of them have to earn it, and it's sometimes it's not a slip-up of their own, and they're out of the team.
Mm-hmm. I think the fact that when you're on 250 grand a week usually softens that blow a little
helps
bit.
The ego when you're not playing.
You know, if you weren't making that much and you're forcing to go, you know, I want to go somewhere, I want to play, and then you might be going, you know what, this might add a few years to my career as well, right? Not playing so much international football. Yeah,
the wage structure has leveled out a little bit there. I mean, obviously they've got the one of the highest wage structures in all of football, but it was at the time when they started to spend a lot of money that they tiered the change room, and I think that they realized the problems that was kind of creating. So it was Nigel de Jong. He was probably the loudest one. He may have had the captain's armband for a bit. I can't remember if Company was on one of those kind of grandfathered in deals where these guys were on like less than 100, 90, 70. There was another regular that was in there. I can't remember if it was Gareth Barry. Gareth Barry was another one that was in this tier. And then you had guys like Yaya Toure and Carlos Tevez. And Tevez was the first big star, remember? And the clause that Kia Gerbachian had put in his deal was Carlos Tevez was always going to be the highest paid player on the team. And it was something like 10 quid or like 100 quid that put it over. But every time someone came in and they gave more money to, Tevez's deal went up. So I think it was Yaya that had come in on like 290 or something stupid. It was near three, something stupid. Now look at how many players are on three now in the Premier League, right? And something like that. And there was this huge rift in the change room because you had these other guys who were, you know, soldiers and in the 11 on, you know, less than half or a third of the money. So I think that they've leveled that out and kind of balanced that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Was there often a lot of wage envy in your change rooms?
Not really.
Did everyone know what each other was on, though? Because the media is not quite the same, right?
But it could be. No, you know, not really. You have a pretty good idea, I guess.
What about in Canada? Canada, when you went to Canada duty, and he's a big time Charlie from the Premier League sitting beside some guy who's without a club. Was it ever an issue?
I brought up the question with the Canadian Soccer Association about, am I even insured?
Good question.
Did they have an answer for you?
No.
You weren't insured?
No. None of us were insured.
Wow. That must have changed when you brought that up.
Yeah, that changed pretty quickly.
Jesus Christ. You talk about a lack of professionalism. Like, that would be one of the first things you would think a national body would consider when they're bringing these guys in from overseas.
Yeah.
I'm surprised your club wouldn't make sure that, you know, the CSA was insuring it properly.
Some junior executive from the Bayern Munich admin department is listening to this podcast right now and immediately pulling up Fonzie's paperwork to make sure that he's insured the entire time he's away with the national program.
Well, do you remember, it wasn't that many years ago, that was a big issue with FIFA, because the big chatter was like, well, there's players getting injured at the World Cup, coming back and missing games, and there should be some sort of compensation for that. And it wasn't until recent years that I think that that's changed. We'll have to get Victor Montaliani back on here and
talk about that.
Tell us what the latest is on that. But that must cost FIFA. Can you imagine what their insurance is on those players?
Well, yeah. Speaking of costing them a lot of money, great segue, Craig, as we get back towards the lead of the day that we've waited 20 minutes to get into. We haven't been together since the World Cup draw came out for the playoffs. The way to be professional, bud.
Sorry.
Yep.
Sorry, it's freaking hilarious. It's so funny.
As Craig Forrest laughs his ass off, waving an Italian Puma shirt across his Zoom box.
Isn't that a beautiful shirt? That is something else, isn't it?
That should be at the World Cup. That should be at the World Cup,
That
Craig.
Should be at the World
it's
Cup.
It's the most classic football shirt out there. Yeah. The
and look, as a football fan, this is what I'm upset about. They both should be at the World Cup. It's a better World Cup when they're both
well,
there.
Well, then finish top of your group. Finish top of your group. Simple.
I mean, I knew that there was a possibility. First off, I still feel like I didn't understand what the pathway looked like. When they talk about these three pathways and the semifinals and this and that, I didn't know what it looked like until it was drawn. And it was like, oh, wait, oh, okay. Oh, that's pretty messed up. If it's, yeah. How come Wales and Scotland get that quartet and you put, you know, Italy, North Macedonia, and Turkey and Portugal together? My God.
It is ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous. But at the same time, these were the rules, and it's pretty simple. Win your group, you qualify. Otherwise, watch out. It's a random draw.
Someone's getting fired for not warming the balls enough to have that avoided. I mean, talk about how much money FIFA spent on insurance. How much money are they losing with Cristiano Ronaldo or the defending European champions not being at the World Cup?
You know, I would throw a name in there if I can mention a North Macedonian player, but at the moment it evades me when they qualify to really upset people.
I would hope that Goran Pandev is coaching at that point.
There we go. Goran Pandev. Yes. Is he still playing? Is he still going to play, right?
No, he's retired. That was a big deal. He retired. No, he retired at the Euros.
Yeah, no, but surely.
You'd think he'd come back.
Surely.
He might make a comeback.
He has to. If they qualify. Yeah. Even before these games.
Well, he should come back for this game.
By the way, the good news is that Canada, by the way, which is very quiet, it's as if the mainstream media don't understand CONCACAF, but the fourth place team is going to meet essentially New Zealand, Oceania. That's huge.
It could be Thomas Rongan's American Samoa or Tonga or Fiji.
But that's enormous for Canada as well.
That is big.
Where is that? So it's the winner of Oceania. Where is that World Cup qualifying at right stage
they haven't
at right
had
now?
Matches. They haven't been able to play it out because of COVID.
But it will likely be New Zealand. It will likely be New Zealand, right?
Yeah, you can pencil New Zealand.
And it's going to be a neutral venue.
And the reason, Sharms, that no one was on about it, because who's excited for New Zealand versus Panama on a streaming service in the middle of the night? No one.
Well, there's that, yeah.
Canada will always already be through at that point, the top three.
But it just made me feel, I mean, listen, I think Canada will be through. You know, we discussed this. You know, they won't need to worry about it. But just as a bit of a safety net, just say, you know, that these horrible road games against El Salvador, Panama, Costa Rica go wrong and they end up finishing fourth. You know, I'm not dismissing New Zealand, but with respect, I love Chris Wood and all, but Canada should be good enough to get past New Zealand.
Look at you naming Kiwis. But you
that's the only one.
But you can't name any North Macedonians.
I should have got Goran Pandev. I know there's a guy who's there. One guy I should know because I covered him for freaking long enough in the Serie A. But anyway, sorry. Back to what we're doing. What we're doing.
We were talking about the World Cup as my gateway to absences and talking about the absence of Cristiano Ronaldo from Manchester United starting 11 against Chelsea. Second time since he's returned that he's not been in United starting 11, but maybe the first big game in his life that he's not been in the starting 11?
From a tactical standpoint, I would imagine. Right.
Well, big game from a tactical standpoint, or the fact that this match really mattered, right, to go up against one of the title rivals.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like from him being benched for tactical reasons ahead of a big game, that has to be the first time.
I would say so. I saw Michael Carrick pre-match, and the reporter was very delicate asking about him, you know, Ronaldo not being in the side and what kind of went into that decision. And Carrick had said, well, he's a professional. Like, he totally understands it. We're going to see how it plays out, to which the reporter insisted. So it's a tactical decision that the side is better without him in the lineup. And he just looked at him like, I didn't say that. You said that. Okay. Have a good match. Have a great match. But I mean, I thought it was pretty surprising to not see him there. And then to see how United played, just waiting for Chelsea to take the game to him that first half. That was an incredibly boring first 45 minutes. They had no intention of competing in that game.
Look at that midfield today. Fred, McTominay, and Matic. Jesus Christ.
You know who was smiling watching that, seeing that starting 11? Fernando Santos. Yeah, three defensive midfielders. It can be done. He was inspired.
Yeah, and Bruno Fernandes is your center forward.
And your captain as well, as a false nine.
Do you think there's been rumblings that it was Rangnick making these calls? And I know Carrick denied them post-match, but you do wonder, because it was so different to what we saw on Tuesday against Villarreal, right? It's such a different team 11, so dramatically different. Now, did Michael Carrick just redefine himself as a coach in those 5 days, or was he getting a little nod from the new man, who still isn't signed, by the way? He's assuming it's happening, right? But I wonder,
you know, he probably felt that why not make significant changes, and I have nothing to lose for doing that. Put out something that he thought, obviously, or somebody else thought was going
to
work.
Or it was Carrick saying to Ronaldo, for example, you know what? I'm not going to be the man. I'm not going to be the top guy. So I'm going to bench you. You should have been benched a while back. You know, you shouldn't have been considered, you know, an automatic starter at least. And because it's not my three weeks from now, it wouldn't matter anyway. Maybe I'm leaving. Maybe I'm being fired next week. Who knows? Yeah. So I'm making a statement. It's interesting.
Carrick's not that type of guy.
He's not like us and just holds a grudge.
I mean, he was young when I was with him at West Ham, but he was just never going to be that type of person that would do that.
Was he like? Was he at West Ham? How was he? Just a quiet young guy, or was he just a nice fella? What was he?
He was pretty quiet. Yeah.
It was just a newbie.
Yeah.
Finding his. I forgot that you had crossover with him.
If they kept those bloody players at West Ham, Craig would be here with a ring on his finger.
He'd be in the Hall of Fame. He would have been first inducted.
Yeah, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Seriously, that was really good team. If you kept Rio and Defoe and Carrick, Joe Cole.
Lampard.
Lamps. Jesus Christ, what a team.
Yeah. Di Canio knocking goals in for fun. Yep. Hartson was good.
Yeah. Ayo Berkovic
was player, great, right? Especially at home. Away from home.
Really?
It's like, where's Ayo?
Absence.
Yeah.
We just didn't get enough of those games on TV.
Don Hutchison, Ian Wright.
Two guys that I'd love to get on the show. I've talked about with
Davor Šuker, legend.
Oh, right. Davor Šuker. I forgot about Davor Šuker. Yeah.
Was he at West Ham when Croatia finished third in the World Cup in 98?
No,
not at that point.
He left after he was broken, right, Craig? Wasn't it? Didn't he arrive with one knee?
One hip.
One hip, was it? Not ideal.
Yeah, he moved like my old lab. Harry was like, oh, I wonder why Arsenal wanted him to go.
So that's how you guys describe Ronaldo when it comes to pressing. You say that he just moves like an old dog. Doesn't move at all.
Davor's nothing like Ronaldo's got lots left in him compared to Davor. Davor was amazing at finishing still, but he just was struggling to move. But his touch he was fabulous, fabulous player.
Well, you won't find another podcast that led with West Ham and City as their lead game, and you won't find another podcast that talked about Davor Šuker more than Cristiano Ronaldo. But I was using, or mistakenly compared, I was using the Ronaldo reference there, the old dog reference, to say that this narrative that, you know, United are a worse team because of Ronaldo. Obviously, I'm sick of it and disagree with it, and not with the same intensity that Roy Keane and Jamie Carragher disagree with each other. But Sky Sports had posted a graphic on their Instagram, and it was essentially two stats. That Chelsea had conceded 17 goals in 31 games under Thomas Tuchel, while United had conceded 19 goals in the 9 games since Ronaldo returned. Ronaldo's not a fucking central defender. And Tuchel, like,
B. It's modern football. B. You defend and attack as a team.
From the front.
You defend from the front. Right.
Defend from the front.
I tell you, we discussed this briefly on the podcast on last week, and I still want to get your – why can't Ronaldo fans ever criticize him? It's got to be 100% or nothing.
I can criticize him. The way he's handled the whole
– whenever you – name one time.
The way he's handled the whole Las Vegas thing with this woman, horrible. Horrible. It's been awful. Come to the States and face the consequences.
What did you make of the nice hoop earring he wears in the warm-up?
I thought he wasn't getting in the team. I thought he thought, I'm not playing at all. To sit there with his giant earring.
Was he a pirate, for Christ's sakes? Jesus, I don't mind a diamond stud go right ahead. Not my thing, but these hoops, these dangly things, even in practice, in warm-ups, you can get tagged. You can get that thing torn out your ear. Tell you what, if I'm Tom Cleverley, he's not there anymore, is he? Someone that's never going to play for United, but I'll be tearing that fucker out of his ear in the warm-up as quickly as possible.
Right now, that Sharms looks like that guy of Beachcomber's Relic.
I'm wearing a toque, and therefore I am Relic.
Yeah, it's a very standard kind of like Toronto toque, but I'd look at it, and my impression is that Sharms is just, you know, trying to look 10 or 15 years younger than he is.
No, trying. No. Why bother trying? Nice. That's a losing battle. I bought this in Edmonton because I was so freaking cold. I had to buy a hat.
You went to Edmonton without a hat?
Yeah, I wasn't thinking.
Stop it.
I know. Well, what do you want?
I'm a Toronto boy. Canadian, or you always tell us, I'm Canadian, but we hear that accent and we hear your ignorance.
You hear the ignorance with or without the accent.
That too. Any more points then on Michael Carrick's?
No, I'll just say that, you know what, good for United for getting the point, but Chelsea were vastly superior in that match and should have won that game by a couple of goals.
Man United looked like a mid-table team. Mm. Let's be honest. They didn't look good at all.
But they didn't want to look good, though. That's the point. I think that the second half was an entertaining game because they caught Chelsea out. Jorginho's mistake. Like,
Hit it. Head the
ball. Don't see that too often from a player of his caliber, right? And he could have turned and shielded towards the keeper. I think that's kind of the standard practice, right? Where, you know, his defenders were in front of him. Oh, he can handle it. He's fine with that.
It was a tough ball, right? I mean, fairness, to control that. But we see it all the time, guys, nowadays. They're so technically gifted, including him. But, I mean, isn't that the first rule? If you're not sure and the ball's in the air, just nut it. Get rid of it.
Well, that's what he was thinking. He didn't even move. He didn't even run back. And no. he was like, they're going to score.
Yeah.
They're going to score. Well, and by the way,
Sancho and Rashford, who's getting them?
Manny and I didn't create anything. And then they get that. And then the goalkeeper mistake, he tries to play out.
Yeah. That's Jesus at the end there, right? Mendy. Oh my God. He should have. Yeah. Total giveaway. Unlike him.
Yeah, it would have been a totally different match. But, I mean, I think the commentary team was harping on Rudiger for not having finished that chance at the end. Chelsea should have won. Rudiger skied it.
I'll tell you what, though. I mean, if you watch it again, it wasn't an easy finish.
No.
It was no Aubameyang on Saturday, all right? And he was a centre back. You know, I mean, Mike, it would have been an amazing – had he finished that, it would have been, wow, what a strike, what a finish. So
no, it wouldn't have.
What, a volley from
7 yards? 7 yards?
It's like Van Basten, Craig. It was Van Basten in 88, and he scored that.
What?
It would have been a good goal, though, right? A good goal.
Goal of the weekend. Point is that Chelsea didn't play a great match, but in the first half, I think that when you have a team that is not interested in playing against you, it's got to be frustrating, even if you're a well-organized and talented side as Chelsea, right? United had no interest in playing against them. They were just defending and parking the bus in a creative way where it's like it's an accordion bus, not the standard traditional boring lower side bus. But, you know, I understand United fans being furious. You don't want to see your team play like that. Have a go. They have the players. Why not have a go?
They listen, B, but they had Jose Mourinho as a manager for a couple of years.
Yes, I know. And people complained about that.
You should be used to it.
Well,
this is not Ferguson, and even Ferguson United, there were times, especially earlier in his reign, where they weren't this swashbuckling team, you know, attacking down the wings. You know, that evolved into that, obviously, but they weren't always that way. And if you look at that, I don't know, you know, I heard, who was saying it? Oh, Michael Owen was saying it, I think in the halftime or post-game show, saying how man for man, compare United to Chelsea, and okay, you give Chelsea the edge, but it's not a dramatic edge. There's some real talent on that United team.
Agreed.
But something's not clicking, obviously, whether it's the players in the wrong position. I don't know what it is, but it's not as if they're devoid of talent. They've got some massive talent on that side.
Seems that way, but mind you, they've had a stack of managers starting to lose count since Alex left.
No kidding.
Yeah, I know. Michael Owen was hammering them in the pre-match show, the Premier League Productions pre-match show. He was on with Paul Scholes. And Scholes wasn't pleased either, but you could see that Michael Owen was peeved at looking at the team, playing scared. He was ripping them for playing scared, not starting their best players and having a go at Chelsea.
Michael Owen is the most improved broadcaster. He should get the most improved broadcaster award.
No kidding.
Don't you think? When he first started, he was so gray and so boring when he first started. Now he's making Paul Scholes seem nice. Right? He is. It's really refreshing to see. I really enjoy Owen's commentary. He's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's some good ones.
They don't hold back.
Ralf Rangnick. Let's finish on that. Ralf Rangnick. Because Sharma made the suggestion that maybe he was pulling the strings, even though he's not got the official title yet. What is Manchester United doing bringing him in? Like, what's your read on that? Because the agreement supposedly is 6 months or finish the season as an interim manager and then to have him involved 2 years as a consultant. And he's thought of as this great mind for having taken, tiny teams and really carried them on and built a structure, developed some amazing managers along the way. He's a real, teacher of the game, right? There's a lot of disciples in the German coaching system that hugely respect him. But he's never been at a team as big as United. He's never been at a team that's run by a marketing company and a corporation. So what are they doing with him?
It seems to me that his reputation's been put on this pedestal in the last 72 hours that anyone outside, the close realms of football really didn't know who this guy was. We watched Hoffenheim, they were great when he was a father of Hoffenheim, right? And they became a really good team playing great football. Leipzig, he's obviously a very, very talented coach and the father of Gegenpress. All these cool catchphrases in modern football, it all kind of ticks the boxes. But where was his name before? Like before when they hired Ole and when they hired, Mourinho and they hired Van Gaal. It was never like, oh, I can't believe they didn't go and get Ralf Rangnick. Right? It seems like his reputation has been put on steroids the last little while. And I think it's probably a very good hire. But my God, I mean, like you read the articles about him now, and now we're discovering what a genius this guy is. I think it's a little bit disingenuous by a lot of these writers.
I think what really boosted his reputation, though, and this may be why they think, oh, well, look, this, the situation didn't work out there, and United have found themselves, what a fortunate situation that he's available and can land in their lap, even though they had to pluck him away from a sporting director job in Russia. But he was supposed to take over and have autonomy at AC Milan, mm-hmm. remember? And they had, so who did they fire and put Pioli in? Was it Gattuso that was there?
I think it was Gattuso, yeah.
They'd put Pioli in as an interim. Pioli didn't really have the resume to have a team like that. They'd hired Rangnick, who was supposed to, he was finishing out whatever job he was in at the time, and he was going to come in as the I don't know if he was officially titled sporting director, but he was going to have autonomy, and this was a big deal. And there was a huge fight behind the scenes with some of the old heads, Maldini and some of the other guys involved that, they didn't want this foreign guy to come in and have so much power. And then AC Milan went on a great run. I think Pioli got them to qualify for the Champions League. They were kicking on. They had an amazing finish, and so Rangnick didn't come in. They kept Pioli, and they tore up the deal. And so you had this guy that was supposed to be this vision available, and then ended up taking a job that wasn't at the same tier. So I think there was always going to be a big side knocking on the door. But I agree with you that it's funny how they're talking up his resume and his CV as this brilliant mind. When they didn't look at him before, but I also think it's they didn't look at him before because he's 63 and he's not really what they're looking for. And this is the thing, is that they're trying to glamorize the situation, but this is still Manchester United, and he hasn't been at this level at all, no experience with English football. And if he's only coming in as the interim, this is my thing, if he's coming in 6 months of the interim, you're going to allow him to be some consultant. Is that a protection for the club to, well, he doesn't really have too much say, it's not a proper title? Because really, he wouldn't be qualified to be a sporting director type. But what if you bring Mauricio Pochettino in, who has a completely different idea of what to do with the team and the academy and all that? It seems crazy to hire, you know, to hire the big idea GM before you hire the coach.
No, you're right. There could be some clashing of heads, but then again, I'm sure I would say I kind of wonder about United sometimes if they've done their homework on people, but you think they've done their homework on a point where, you know, how is his work and relationships with others? And if this does happen, how are you going to be with like that, with that? How are you going to be, what would that working relationship be with A, B, C, D people? Because they're all going to have different personalities. I would expect that United would do that.
You wonder if they touch base through an intermediary with Poch and saying, hey, could you work with this guy? If he is their guy this summer, I'm sure if it's going to happen, it's being discussed in some regard. All right. Can you work with him? And quite frankly, look at Poch's preferred way of playing. High press, aggressive, high energy, just like Rangnick, right? I bet Poch respects him enormously for what he started and created. So there's that, because otherwise, you know, a six-month hire for a guy who's going to completely redefine the way they play, that's not long enough.
No, of course not.
Right? And they haven't got players. They haven't even got players that will do that, as far as we know. I mean, maybe he can – listen, the young guys, the Greenwoods, the Rashfords, I think they'll do whatever they're told. And they've got the energy to do that, to press. I'm not sure whether Bruno or whether – certainly Ronaldo. I'm really curious about Ronaldo. I mean, Christ, he doesn't run anymore. And he's been told to press on the front foot if that's what Rennick will be pushing. You know, in a short contract, that's a big ask to redefine the way you play entirely. If it's a long-term hire, you're hiring this guy in a 4 or 5 year contract, okay, that's one thing. But they haven't done that. And like I said, the consultancy is interesting. What does that mean? You know, it's really interesting.
Put Ronaldo center back.
You know, he could probably do a great job there if you tell him and he buys into it. But hey, he stormed off the field today without shaking hands once again, all sulky and stuff. So
yeah, there was a time not that long ago, he was probably would have been the best player on every position on the field. Don't you think?
If you put him at center back, you think he'd be defending as well as for Van Dijk?
At a time, he would have been the best player anywhere. He was like LeBron James. You could put him any position LeBron, he's the best. Ronaldo, the best.
Do you know who Mr. Versatility is now? Ashley Young. Ashley Young could play every position except goalkeeper. And I said on our show, I think, Force, were you in the tent and Sharma was away? And I said, I suspect based on Gerard and Ashley Young's relationship, having played together in England, that I wouldn't be surprised at all if you see him in more of a midfielder role. And he's kind of got him like as a floating number 10.
And he's taking big free kicks late in games, you know,
taking big free kicks, matches. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I've always loved Ashley Young. I think he's a great player. And he looks good, natural in that Villa outfit, doesn't he?
He does. Well, it's because it's where he belongs.
Yeah.
He was the first interview rejection that I've had in my professional journalistic career. Yeah. He was sat with his slides on and he was on the other side of the tape, but like 10 feet away. And I'd asked to interview him. And the PR woman goes over and says, oh, this gentleman from some local would like to interview. And he looks at me, he puts his slides on and goes, nah. And got up and walked away at BMO.
What a prick.
It's okay. I was probably. I think I'm younger than him, so maybe it was that. And he just looked at the child and thought.
Were you wearing a rubber shirt at the time?
No, I was probably trying to dress like you. I think I was wearing a blazer.
Was that Score Days or Sportsnet Days?
This was Score Days, yeah. This was Score Days. But I think I was too junior at the time to get in with my Score creds. I think Archivist didn't count.
Hey, the Score creds didn't get us very far either.
No, so it was my university newspaper actually that got me the credentials in there to
was it really
the Aston Villa training day ahead of their season one international friendly or whatever you call it with
so maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was like, you know, they said listen Ashley, you've got this frat boy over there who wants to interview you, and he goes, oh, I have not got any time for this. This is not Animal House. I don't care.
I got Gabby Agbonlahor and I got a couple of minutes with Martin O'Neill, though, so I'd take that. Yeah. Overall, it was a good day.
Yeah.
Remember me and Jerry got snubbed by Freddie Adu.
Really?
I wasn't happy.
No. Oh, shit.
I wasn't very professional from a broadcast standpoint.
That must have been pretty early in your broadcasting.
2007 World Cup?
No, it was a Gold Cup.
So are you then? Have you been really happy to see his playing career just like, you know, peter out to this, you know, nondescript blur?
Well, we saw that already coming.
Did you?
Yeah.
So maybe he knew that's what you thought, and he thought, I'm not speaking to that old guy.
Well, you know how the, you know, the scrum type, they're behind a barrier, and they're just kind of walking
through the mix zone? Yeah.
Through the mix zone, picking and choosing whatever, right? I don't know who he, I think he did one or something like that, and he was the cock of the walk. And so they gave it the old, who the fuck do you think you are? You haven't done nothing. Do an interview, you little shit.
So you said this or you thought this?
Yeah, I know I said it. Jerry was like, oh, leave him alone.
That's amazing.
All these other American guys are looking at me. I'm just like, well it's true. Isn't it?
No, absolutely. It's true.
Good on you, man.
Who do you think you are?
Come on.
Good on you. You, yeah. That's flex your 6'7" height and you played in the Premier League. Come speak to us, you child of America. Yes.
Yeah. You and your $15 million Nike contract. Come over here.
Yeah. I'm stuck behind this cage with all these other guys.
See, that's Craig. That's Craig who hadn't quite accepted the fact that he's no longer playing. He's still, you know, in his mind, he's a Premier League footballer. And he's like, fuck. God damn it. What happened to me?
No, it's just more the fact that I would never do, like, I would do as many as I possibly could. Like, I would try to help out, you know, answer a few fucking questions. Jesus Christ, ain't that hard. Americans, man, they do love the old, like, big time Charlie one. A lot of them, anyway.
Podcasts, promoting other podcasts. If you've not listened to Grant Wall's Prodigy series on Freddie Adu, it's like a four or six parter. It's very good.
Very good. Yeah.
He speaks with our friend Thomas Rongen and Freddie Adu. It's the longest exclusive I think Freddie Adu is kind of given. It's very well done. Somehow we went from Steven Gerrard and Aston Villa's 2-1 win over Crystal Palace to Freddie Adu. I love that. Patrick Vieira and Gerrard on the touchline. Did that make you feel old? Because it actually made me feel old. It's strange that this is where we are now. That they're managers and they've managers with experience. Not like this is their first jobs either. It's like they're seasoned managers.
You watch that, and I think we're going to be seeing those guys in the sidelines at various clubs for a very long time, and it's good. Because there are guys that, no matter who you supported, you respected, I think, as fans, right? You love them as footballers. I mean, Vieira was everything I wanted to see in a midfielder. You know, obviously I had a bit of a, you know, fanboying with Gerrard, being a Liverpool fan. But Patrick Vieira, man, I mean, what a leader he was. Some of those Arsenal teams are the toughest teams to play against. Craig will tell you. I mean, obviously.
He spat in Razor Ruddock's face, like, right, just big logie right into his face.
Keep the story going there, Craig. It gets really disgusting. Go, say it.
Oh, when Razor took it off his face
and licked it with his finger.
It's not a visual medium. Basically, Razor ate Patrick Vieira's loogie.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
He was trying to show him how tough he was.
Did he get a superpower? Like, did he become Vieira for a few minutes at least?
Did he speak French?
Yeah, suddenly, Razor Ruddock speaking French.
Yeah, did something special come from the transfer of saliva there?
Razor was a classic. I can't remember if the referee saw it, he got sent off. But, I mean, eventually he was suspended for it because it was on camera, but I can't remember. Razor was just happy that he got him sent off.
I could see Patrick Vieira having some success at Crystal Palace, you know, keeping them mid-table, kicking on, maybe a season or two, looking like they're flirting with the Conference League, finishing the Conference League. I could see him staying at Palace for 4 or 5 seasons and then taking the Arsenal job. I don't know how long Klopp would stay at Liverpool and who, you know, what would stop Gerrard from being the next guy there. Like if Klopp's the wheels totally years, fall right? off at Villa, if they're flirting with relegation, he gets fired. Maybe that deters Gerrard being the next guy. But if Gerrard's in the job and there's any hint that Klopp is going, it's him, right?
Yeah, well, it seems that's the pathway, right? I mean, Klopp's going to do 2 more years.
Just give it a couple months.
Yeah, enjoy it, B. Come on, just enjoy this. 2 years, he could do some wonderful things for your club.
I think so. Yeah. No, I'm very happy. Yeah, I can't wait to see what you know available Rangers players he brings in January. No, I'm
Giovanni Van Bronckhorst has replaced him and done well so far. Won his first game today.
I saw, and Scott Arfield actually was.
Yeah, that's right. Scotty Arfield scored.
He scored. Also, I shared on the Footy Prime account by the time you listen to this. Stephen Vitoria scored a cracker of a free kick. Did you see this yet?
I did not
see that. It was a 96th minute for his team, whose name I can't remember, Moreirense, and they were playing Gil Vicente. They were at home in the 96th minute, and he hit this perfect, like, this was a Jovinko free kick. And at first, it's like, the commentator says it, and I'd seen it in the tweet, so I knew it was Vitoria, but it made no sense. Like, who got injured? What happened? But did he lose a bet? And this, it's not like they were up 4-0 or something. And he steps up and he hits this absolute laser beam to the top left right corner. It was great. Stephen Vitoria.
Well, watch out for Vitoria on free kicks now for Canada.
That's interesting. Maybe he had had a few in training, and they said, all right, go ahead.
Well, just the confidence of playing with Canada, that you can do, I can do anything.
Honestly, eh? I'm not just Superman.
Canada is the steroid that Patrick Vieira's loogie was for Neil Ruddock.
Yes.
Right?
I love that. Yeah, that's excellent. How long is it going to take Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang to get his confidence back after that miss, which James Sharman tweeted, the miss of the century?
No, I said one of the worst ever.
He hit the post. Yeah, it was awful, and that's a player you expect to put it in, but there's a lot of guys that would miss that.
There's a few bad misses.
Just unlucky.
No, it was pretty bad.
There was another, talk about things like memories blending together, there was another crazy miss this weekend. On Saturday.
Oh, yeah, there was. Jesus, it wasn't as bad as Aubameyang, though.
Was it Brighton Leeds?
I think it was. Oh, it yes. was. It wasn't Mope. It yes. was.
Yeah, it was Mope. It was Neil Mope.
Was it Mope? Neil Mope, right? But it was.
Yeah,
I
think he missed about three.
He did. It was like, the ball was rising at the time, right? It would have been it was a bit more tricky, I think. But the first look was like, wow, what a miss.
Yeah, Neil Mope.
Yeah. That was the biggest one. And then the third was Rudiger.
Right.
Oh, no, it wasn't. Jesus Christ, that would have been a freaking worldie.
That's Greg Forrest's podium of misses. Let's keep the segment. We need more sellables, Charms.
We're not talking about you, Charms. You trying to get on a ball coming in that fast? You'd be just,
Have you played in 2 years, Charms? Well, you were the goalie.
No.
We played the co-ed league.
One soccer.
The one soccer.
Yeah, no, I was
for the one
goal.
Soccer team, yeah. And then you didn't show up for the second half of the season.
I was done. No, I had one good game, and then it's like, okay, I'm leaving.
Did you? Did you two-foot anybody?
No, I was playing in goal, though. And I made a couple of saves. Sorry, I think goalie got injured, didn't he, or something? I forget now. Anyway, made some, some acrobatic, Aaron Ramsdale-esque saves.
Oh, he had another beauty in that game as well.
He did. He's a good goalkeeper.
Every single time they play on Sunday, and Craig and I do the show, he's got some world-class save that he's just pulled off. I'm such a big fan of his.
I've always been a fan of his, too. I can see why he just doesn't look, the presence of some other goalkeepers that are in the Premier League, if you know what I mean. Like, he's a little bit unorthodox. He's, I don't know. It just seems like he's a level below, but he's not.
Right. He's always like laughing and smiling and stuff. He's got a real personality, it looks like, right? Maybe that's what it is. He's not this robotic creature like Schmeichel started. He has real personality.
No, I think it's been a long road for him, and he's got this unbelievable opportunity, and he hasn't let himself down or anybody else. Mm-hmm. It's been great.
Eddie Howe's tenure hasn't started very well. They're in real trouble, Newcastle.
They're going down.
No, they've got 6 points. They're the only team in the Premier League not to have won a game. They have 6 points after having played 13. Here's a fact for you. No team that has earned just 6 points from 13 has survived. So if they were to do so, and I believe they will.
No team in this position has ever been bought by a bone saw merchant.
That's true as well.
And they're going to be able to spend some money in January.
Yeah, when Haaland comes in January, they'll be just fine.
But by that point, it could be too late. I mean, there's a lot of really bad teams, though, luckily. Even like Leeds, right? They're on the cusp of the drop zone. Yeah. They're actually playing quite well, just not getting results. But Newcastle, I mean, I thought Newcastle actually, they're fun to watch now, at least. They're certainly, the Eddie Howe way. They're pushing forward. They're attacking. Jonjo Shelvey looks reborn.
Yeah, John Joe Shelvey, actually, Ramsdale stopped him twice, I think. The one big save was against John Joe Shelvey. So, yeah, he's been reborn.
John Joe reminds me, like Dicchio. I mean, Dicchio's got, like, 11 sons. But if I haven't seen them, I haven't seen them in pictures, don't know Dicchio's sons. But John Joe Shelvey could be Danny Dicchio's son.
I've never thought of that.
Nor have I until this second.
Liverpool 4, Southampton 0.
Meh.
Oh, what a performance.
Jota and Mohamed Salah. They might be two of the best players in the game right now.
Unbelievable.
Well, I think we agree that Salah is, right? But Jota is fast emerging as
on form.
One of the top players in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm. If you were to each month, if you did an on form 11, I think Jota and Salah would be two of the first names on the team sheet.
Well, forget them. What about Thiago, by the way? If he can just stay healthy, he's one of the top 10 players in the world. He's incredible.
Jeez, that's unbelievable.
He's incredible. I was wondering how things would go with him this season because he didn't really settle in last year.
Well, he had injuries. It's like wherever he goes, Barcelona, Bayern, injuries. When he stays healthy, he's
just... Yeah, he doesn't seem to last a long time, does he? Like have a stretch.
No,
like,
exactly.
Because he's fantastic.
But unlike Gundogan, who always was injured and would walk back into the team, I feel like Thiago doesn't have that. And under Liverpool, he hasn't.
In a perfect world, that he's in that midfield with Henderson and Fabinho, right? And then they did it this weekend, but it was so rare that you've seen that. I think it's happened like three or four times. But yeah, he sprays that ball around. And that goal he scored in the Champions League this week, that one skipper, my God, incredible.
Yeah, he's a hell of a player. And I think Liverpool, you know, people were very envious of Liverpool having just won the title. To sign him, it seemed like, you know, if that was the piece they were adding to kick on and challenge the side, my God, there'd be no stopping them. But it didn't work out for him last year, and we'll see if it does for the rest of the season. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain has looked pretty good when he's been on. Hey, there's a player that you forget is on Liverpool's books. If only he could stay healthy.
Yeah, I think the happiest people were probably Southampton. Driving back, and it was only 4-0.
I was thinking at one point that first half, Craig, thinking, man, you know, once again, this team's going to be the one to, you know, guarantee some interviews for you for the next few weeks, right? Whenever they get beaten 9-0, you get the phone calls, right?
Yeah. Whenever it's 4-5-0 after a half an hour. Kind of old hat now, though, isn't it? Because, what, has there been four times now?
Yeah, they're calling the other goalkeepers. You've been relegated down the pecking order. They're calling the other guys.
Yeah, really. Budweiser, what did they do? A thing for Messi? Sent all the goalkeepers
a few bottles of beer.
A bottle with a number of that they conceded of is how many goals? 300 and something. I don't know how many goals.
No, it was
insane.
Nuts.
Insane. I'd be happy to have a bottle.
Free beer.
Imagine if you played him once and he didn't concede, and he didn't, or even if you played him two or three times, you didn't concede.
Yeah, and not getting free beer sucks.
No, but it's a great thing to tell the grandkids. Like it's one of those monumental achievements.
Yeah, but they go, yeah, my grandpa, you got fuck all to show for it. At least they got a bottle.
Yeah, maybe. So
when Craig's telling his grandkids how, you know, he saved more penalties at Old Trafford than Peter Schmeichel.
I haven't got any grandkids, but that's what I'm going to say.
When you do, though, yeah, one day.
One day, buddy. What do you think Max Allegri is telling the guys in the Juventus room? He's telling the old stories about how they used to win, how they used to be good.
Did they lose again?
Now Juve is just a shell. They lost 1-0 at home to Atalanta. Wow. They're eighth in the Serie A. Eighth at the end of November. Six wins, three draws, five losses.
Well, they won 9 straight Scudettos, right?
They did, until Pirlo came in and ruined it all. Have you watched the All or Nothing on Amazon?
With Juve?
It's on that last season. Yeah, I think it just dropped this month.
I have not seen that, but I'll definitely watch it.
So it's in the same cycle as the Leafs, right? They do a few, you know, in a calendar year or whatever. It's in that same cycle as the Leafs, and it is very good. I've only watched the first episode so far, but... on point with all the other ones, and you can kind of see how it's building, you know, to set up Pirlo as the evolution of this famed club. That season's going to go down in flames. And it was a pretty disastrous, you know, well, I don't know if disastrous is the right term either. I think in general, he was brought in at a time where they weren't as good as the sides previous. They didn't have the budget. They weren't spending to win the Champions League. And they were just hoping that here's someone that was great in midfield and we're really lacking in the midfield right now. Maybe he can coach these guys to be better and we can challenge and give Ronaldo another trophy. But it's nice to see that up close and personal.
No, clearly Craig and I didn't watch Juve.
I wasn't.
Did you guys know Sir Frank Williams died? You guys are racing fans.
I did see that. Yeah,
I did see that. Yeah, yeah. End of an era. It was
a legend.
Founder of Williams.
It's a great documentary on him. I think BBC did it. It might just be called Frank.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Not the nicest family man. He was?
No, I've heard that, yeah. Well, he didn't seem that he wasn't the warmest personality when you saw him interviewed, was he? Let's be honest. But no. Hey, listen, let's not speak badly of someone that's just died. He was did a lot for Formula One and Williams and, you know, from Nigel Mansell to Ayrton Senna to Damon Hill.
Yeah, he had some great drivers in.
Pretty good drivers.
Lewis Hamilton said he was one of the kindest people that I had the pleasure of meeting in sport.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
He lived for racing. He absolutely loved Formula One.
Well, he got paralyzed, for Christ's sakes.
His nose grew about a foot.
Let's not talk bad, Craig, about someone that's just died.
Well, that's right. I don't know Frank Williams
either, no.
But at the end of the day, if you did know an asshole that died, he'd just be a dead asshole.
That's a valid point. I know. People become wonderful human beings in death often. Which I'm not sure should be the case.
We're not saying that about Sir Frank, but...
Not everyone. I mean, like, you know, the Saddam Husseins of the world and the, you know, Osama bin Ladens, the Adolf Hitlers, generally speaking, they're not celebrated in death as being, you know what, he's a good family guy.
Pretty good dad. You know, you can always find something good to, you know, look at, right? Something positive.
When Malcolm Glazer died a couple of years ago now, I didn't see too many Man United blogs, you know, celebrating the great guy that he was.
You don't read the underground business journals that would have praised the man.
No, that's true.
For all
that's
of the true. Great ways yeah, that he exploited right. certain, you know, workforces and populations around the world to benefit his wealth.
Allegedly.
Thanks for joining us on the Sunday night show again, Charms. It's great to have a guest.
Hey, I enjoy it. It's good. Like I said, I'll do it whenever I can.
I didn't expect to do an hour with you guys with the condition in which I feel. I'm going to go and drink.
You're a trooper, man. You're a martyr. You're sick.
Yeah.
You are.
Just get through it.
I'm going to eat a big bowl of caldo verde.
I don't know what that is.
Which is Portuguese potato and kale soup. It's legendary. Bit of sausage in there. Mm. You'd love it. Well, I hope you enjoyed this as much as we did. Everyone, we'll have more guests in the future and we'll get back in the tent and hopefully have 5 microphones this time. Next time we get back in the tent with Dan Wong. To quote James Sharman, cheers for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.